America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're going to let you hear Brock Purdy in full. From his press conference today. However, as soon as that's over, we got to play something for you from, you just referenced Nick Sorensen talking today. We got to play something for you from Nick Sorensen when he answered a question about the Niners tackling. Whew, you're going to want to hear this, okay? So that we'll do right after Brock, but here's Brock.
Brock, when you start to dive into the Seahawks, how many similarities, or are there a lot of similarities from what you faced last year with the Ravens?
Yeah, I'd say so. Scheme is pretty similar, and how they call the plays and stuff looks similar. Obviously, the personnel and everything is different, and so we just got to know, you know, obviously which guys to look out for in certain situations. But, yeah, the scheme is very similar.
How do you look back on that game against the Ravens? You know, it didn't go the way you wanted it to. So how do you just look back on that game?
Yeah, I mean, we've watched it a bunch just in terms of, like, what we're trying to do, what their scheme was against our offense and our scheme. And so watching it, obviously, I'm watching how the game went and the decisions that I made and stuff, and obviously, like, learning from it. But more than anything, just when I do get in those situations again, like, handling everything in the right way in terms of getting to my answer and you know, taking what the defense gives me and those kinds of things. So it's been really good watching, but at the same time, like I said, we're playing a whole new personnel and the Seahawks, and so should be a little bit different in that regard, just playing different players. But when it comes to scheme versus scheme, it was good to watch the game last year against Baltimore, and so it was good.
On the last interception against the Cardinals, it looks like you were waiting for Ayuk on the out route, and then Kittle underneath. I say, as you're walking out the field, you look at the video board. Do you in that moment see it? It looked like obviously you went through it and kind of grimaced. I mean, when you look at the video board, do you see like, oh, crap?
Yeah, I mean, I got hit, and so I'm like, all right, how did that happen with, you know, our protection that we had on and stuff? And we had two guys come to the side of where our protection was set, and one guy was free. And so that's on me in terms of getting the ball out and not holding on to it. So in that situation, when I was walking off, looking at the video board, I was like, man, did I miss a guy, or did I just try to get to Ayuk the whole time and not see what was going on with the blitz and stuff? So in that moment, that's what I was thinking about and wish I would have executed it differently.
The stats suggest that you're holding onto the ball longer than any other quarterback, and obviously your scrambles are, you know, producing that number, but does it feel different than 22 and 23 as far as, just snap to release time for you?
I feel like there's just been some plays where I'm scrambling and stuff just because, like, what the defense is doing in terms of dropping eight and giving us some different looks in that regard. So for me, it's more been about keeping a play alive, and it's been good. And there's also been some plays, obviously, where, you know, we've had, you know, minus 10 or whatever from trying to scramble around and stuff. So there's, I think, those kinds of plays that pop up. So that may be how that's affected the stats with that. But for me, I still go about my progressions and everything just like I have the last couple of years with our offense and our system. I'm not going into a game going, all right, I'm going to hold on to the ball longer here and try to make something happen. It's how can I be efficient, help out the O-line, get the ball out of my hands, and do my job. So, but this, the teams that we've played, the schemes that we've played, I guess they've done some of that where they're dropping more back in the zone and making me go through my progression, and turns out I'm holding on to the ball. So.
It's that, Brock. Is your play action is down this year from what's been in the past. Is that a function of that? When teams are dropping more, you don't want to turn your back because you need that extra time to go through progressions? Or what do you kind of attribute that to?
I don't know if that's the case. I would say, you got to be running the ball really, really well and then setting up certain plays and stuff. And where we're at, I think we're running the ball really well. But I think within schemes and trying to win with certain plays drawn up, for us it's just been drop back plays. And we trust in the guys to just be able to drop back and allow me to go through a progression and rip it to them. So, we're not going into a game saying they're going to drop back a lot, so we're going to stay away from the play action pass. We still have plays dialed up in the play action world, but we just haven't had opportunities to run them in the right situations or whatnot. But again, we're trusting in Kyle within all the play calls with that regard, and so that's just sort of just how the flow of the game has gone and the play calls have gone. So
last year you guys were the number one team in the league in red zone touchdown percentage. This year it's been more of a struggle. What does the film show? How would you evaluate what you guys have done in the red zone?
Yeah, I think we've had some opportunities, and I think that's an area for me to be better for sure. Trust the plays, trust the concepts, trust my guys, and being willing to go down there and rip it. I mean, like I said, when I talked to you guys last time after the game, you know, the windows get tighter and the timing of it is quicker and faster. So for me, it's about getting back into a rhythm down there and give my guys a chance. So that's probably the biggest thing that I've seen on film.
After the game, you and Nick Bosa both said that you need to get back to complimentary football. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, man, it's a team sport. So for four quarters, when the defense gets a stop for us as an offense, it's like, all right, let's pick it up and go put points on the board, and vice versa. When we're rolling, defense get a stop, special teams do their thing. That's complementary football. That's how you win in this league. And if defense is getting all these stops and the offense is cold, I mean it's pretty obvious to everybody that it's going to be tough to get into a rhythm and pull away from a team, and then you allow a team to stay in the game and those kinds of things. But last couple years when we've won pretty well, it's been about complementary football. Defense gets stops and turnovers, offense puts up points on the board, and we pull away. So we both believe in that, and everyone here knows that's the truth.
It's early, but can this type of game galvanize you based on a little bit of a slow start and knowing what the schedule looks like with a couple of hard home games after this as well? Can this kind of game rally you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think every game for us is extremely important. Obviously, you get through the end of the season, it's like, where are you at, wins and losses and all that kind of stuff going into the playoffs. So, I mean, everything matters. But for us, man, all that matters right now is Seattle Thursday night. Getting back into the win column and just picking up our momentum, man. I think the season is so much about momentum and obviously staying healthy and getting ready for the next game. But for us, man, it's one game at a time. We're not looking too far ahead in the future. And whoever we get up on our schedule for the next game, that's who we got. But we're not looking too far into it, and we just got to win.
You're scrambling and extending plays has largely been positive this season. A couple of sweet ankle breaking moves early Sunday. But when you do have the one, where you run around for 10 seconds and get sacked, is it a reminder of like, oh gosh, maybe I can take this, go too far with this? Or is it just like, okay, if I do this, 12 times and I get sacked once, that's just the way it goes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the situation that we're in within the game. and being smart with the ball, putting my team and my offense in the best situation possible. If I can make something happen with my legs and move the chains or get a positive gain, great, let's go. But at the same time, knowing that, you know, that's not going to be the case every time I'm scrambling around like it's backyard football. Like, I got to be smart, make a couple guys miss, maybe throw the ball away, being willing to play with third manageable rather than, you know, trying to make up for it after a 10-yard loss with a crazy scramble. So definitely depends on the situation, but also knowing that I have confidence and belief in my legs as well to make some plays in the right scenario. So fine balance.
How does it help your confidence level? Now you've gone in there twice, once with broken ribs, and then last year on Thanksgiving night, that you're able to go in that environment and come out with a win. How does that help you comfort and confidence-wise without, obviously it's not the major emphasis?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for us, it's sort of just a good reminder of you're going into a hostile environment where they're going to be on you every time we step out onto the field. Got a great defense, great players that we're going against, and a great team. And so every chance and opportunity you get, man, you got to be on top of it. And if you can and execute and play team football, some good things can come from it. And it feels good when you're able to walk out knowing that you guys did your job really well. And so obviously we've learned that as a team the last couple of years, but this is a new year, it's a new team for both sides, and you know, just got to go in and execute and be dialed in every moment. So yep. Thanks guys.
All right, there it is from Brock Purdy, and here's my two top takeaways. Number one, obviously Brock has gotten very good, and I don't mean to make it sound disingenuous, but there's a lot of accountability there, and I do think that one of the leadership qualities that Brock is very, very good at is he's going to have his teammates' backs, and he's going to understand that as the leader of the team, you have to remember what I said a couple weeks ago when we were talking about a different situation. When things are going, if you're the leader, when things are going bad, you tuck everyone behind your back. When things are going good, you push them out to the front.
Yeah.
And I think he does that very well. The other thing he does very well is sound exactly like Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
I mean, we no joke. Comcast Business Text Line 925. Purdy's Kyle impersonation is better than Dibs.
That hurts a little bit, but he's right.
And stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. And it's funny because as we were listening to that, I was reading the transcript, and so I was anticipating when the stuffs were coming because I'm reading along with Brock's answers, and it's just perfectly slotted right where Kyle would do it and stuff. And just, you know, I'm looking at the question about that, the last interception where he got blitzed and, you know, he looked at the video board and he saw it and, like, what was his reaction? He said, yeah, I got hit. And so I'm like, all right, how did that happen with our protection that we had on and stuff? And it's, to your point, he's like, yeah, we had two guys come to the side where one guy was free. And then he immediately says, so that's on me in terms of getting the ball out and not holding on to it. Okay, yeah, it is on you, but it's also on the blockers. And I know they had two guys for one blocker, but what you're talking about is really evident to me that he looks at that play and he sees what he could have done better. So he's putting himself out there as the one to blame, not the lack of protection or the bad play call or whatever else he could have pointed to. He pointed to himself and what he could have done. And I love that. That's leadership.
It not only is it leadership, by the way, I think it's kind of a good message for the way to sort of approach life, if you will. Brock Purdy has no control over what Deebo Samuel does. He has no control over what Dominic Pooney does.
Yeah.
He has no control over what Brandon Ayuk does. Those guys have control over what they do. Brock is in control of one thing, and that is what he can do better. And there's probably very few moments in any of our lives where we're like, I was perfect on that one.
Right.
Like, even if it goes well, like, you know, like that's, I don't know, that's the best way to go about stuff, right? Is to look at what you have control over and try to work on that. So he's very, very good at that. I don't know if he's like the most open player that we've ever seen in terms of sharing things that are going to actually give fans to chew on, because he does handle it like that. But then again, that's what you want.
Yeah.
You especially out of a quarterback slash CEO slash leaders, whatever you want to call it.
And I do think a lot of this comes from the fact that he started for 4 years in college. So he had to do a lot of press in college, and he had a lot of adversity at Iowa State. And so he's used to these sorts of situations. And so when you become the, like you called him, the CEO of the 49ers, at least on the field, you're the quarterback of the 49ers, you understand the questions that will come, and you understand how to answer them. And he was asked about, you know, them not doing a lot of play action this year and what that's about. And, you know, he gave a very good answer about, you know, the defense is doing certain things and him having faith in Kyle's calls. And, you know, whatever Kyle calls, whatever the approach is, they're going to go out there and they're going to run it to the best of their ability.
Let's go to, we're going to do Grandy's grades here in just a little bit. Let's go to Joe in the Valley, though, right now. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. First-time caller, long-time listener. But I just wanted to kind of bring up Shanahan's play calling. I've always been a big fan of it, and honestly, I couldn't see where we would be without him. But there was a quote from George Kittle after the Patriots game about his touchdown that I just thought was really interesting and kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it. But the quote that I have says, I wasn't really confident in the play call because that was something we called from way further out. And when he called it from the 10, I had to double check with Brock to make sure it was the right play. And I was like, all right, man, just throw it. And he threw it. So that's all. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, but before you go, Joe, like what's the specific question that you're kind of wondering about? Does that sort of feel uncomfortable that it happened down close to the goal line, even though it was called maybe some minutes earlier? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, it's just kind of funny that Kittle's bringing it up and kind of not really just questioning a little bit, not actually like calling it out like that. But it's just funny how they're kind of like was kind of confused in the play call, maybe not thought it was maybe the right play call. And It kind of makes me wonder if maybe Shanahan's kind of trying to subtly experiment this year when he has kind of opportunities to do so with different formations. So that's what I was kind of reading into it.
Interesting, Joe. I don't know. Thank you very much for the call. I don't know what you think about that. There's two things that popped in my mind. One, George, he speaks to people differently than everybody else does.
Yep, yep.
Like, he's really open. He's sarcastic. He's fun. He's funny. He's quirky. And he'll tell you stuff. He'll tell you what's going on in his mind. And what's going on in his mind is often not what's going on in other people's minds. Go back to when the 49ers won the NFC Championship. How many of you would have handled this way? Even if this was a great moment in your life, whatever it was, and you are, you're up on a stage and the whole world is sort of pointed at you, and you're being congratulated for one of the great achievements in your career. And as you turn to your right and take five steps, you literally physically accidentally bump into Joe Montana. Now, what would you do in that moment? George decided to go, oh, hey, Joe. Hey, I got to go find my wife. I miss her. And he ran away.
Yeah.
Now George, different. Okay.
Yeah, and he loves his wife
yes,
like that.
Which is wonderful. I don't mean it about that. I just mean George is a quirky dude. So when you ask him that, he's like, that's not what I thought we were going to do, but then we did it and it worked and that was fun. And then I watched wrestling and we had drinks. Right. So part of it, I think, is just his answer.
Grandy has the actual quote queued up. So
yeah, here we go.
It felt fantastic. I'm just wasn't really confident in the play call because that was something we had called originally from like way farther out. And when he called it from the 10, I had to double check with Brock to make sure it was the right play. And I was like, all right, man, just throw it. And he just threw it. So it was pretty fun.
Turns out it was also that's so George. And it turns out it was also maybe the easiest play of the entire game.
Yeah.
Brock was like, snap, boop, touchdown. You're almost looking at the defense like, I'm sorry, did you decide to start guarding George 4 yards into the end zone? Did you think that 2 yards into the end zone didn't need to be guarded? It was too easy.
It was by formation that made that play so genius, and I detailed it in my own notes because it was 22 personnel, 2 running backs, 2 tight ends, 1 receiver, but they went empty. So when they break the huddle normally, and as a defense, when you look at that huddle and you see Saubert and Kittle, you see Mason and Juszczyk, and it probably was Ayuk, I don't have that one down, but if you see that in the huddle, you're thinking 2 running backs, 2 tight ends, they're going to go big, they're going to run this thing from the 5-yard line. They break the huddle and they go empty. And now as a defense, you're thinking, oh, Casey Schmidt, we didn't expect that. And instead of, you know, you got Saubert out wide, Kittle in the slot, and they didn't really think about covering Kittle. They were clearly confused because he comes off the line of scrimmage, takes two steps and turns, and Brock goes, oh, yeah, that's a freebie. Yeah.
I think the caller was talking about the crazy touchdown catch against the Patriots. That's what Kittle was reacting to there.
Gotcha.
In the
okay.
back left corner
okay.
of the end zone where he got over three different guys.
Yeah. My bad on that one then. Yeah, I didn't understand that's what that one was about. I thought he was talking about the touchdown catch against the Cardinals just
that
this last
like
week.
That seemed like a pretty easy, good play call for Shanahan. Yeah.
Yeah. The one with George in the corner of the end zone, much more intricate. And my initial reaction to that, I'd have to go back to take a look at the formation and everything as it came together. But in going back to that, it was both a brilliant throw by Brock, but almost incorrectly executed. If I'm remembering now, because we're 2 weeks removed.
Yeah. Third and 10 at the 12.
Third and 10 at the 12. And this is following two out of the last three plays were touchdowns that were called back by banana head refs.
Well,
sorry, banana head calls by the refs.
Mason had the 38 yarder, but it was a hold on Kittle,
which it wasn't.
And then you had the
Juszczyk touchdown,
illegal shift,
which it wasn't.
Illegal shift,
which it wasn't. And to add insult to injury or injury to insult, not only was there a penalty called on Jordan Mason running into the end zone that shouldn't have been called, the ref hit Jordan Mason with the flag, which was doubly disrespectful. So that's
that happens.
That's the backdrop. That's the backdrop of what's going on. Brock drops back on this play and is immediately pressured. And he decides, I'm going to throw the ball to a spot. We're going back left corner end zone. And he does the duck and throw. It's like
the chuck and duck.
Yeah. Yep. And just like he's diving out of the way. And you're like, when he throws it, like I don't even know who he's throwing it to. Then
I thought he was throwing it away.
Yeah. Then camera pans out there and you're like, oh, it's Kittle, but he almost put too much air underneath it. It was a great idea, but he put so much air underneath it that by the time the ball gets to Kittle, as we all know, three defenders have joined him and Kittle makes an unbelievable grab, not just to get his hands on it, but to hold on to it as he goes to the ground. So from a play calling sort of schematic situation, yeah, I get where Kittle might be looking at that and going, okay, this one might not make sense right now, but I don't know. Like it was executed wonderfully, as it turned out.
Yeah, because he went up there and high pointed it and pulled that thing in 20-0 at that point. And yeah, it felt like that game should be comfortable and it should be over. And then the Patriots answer with a field goal, and then you open up with that special teams gaffe.
Our version of the butt fumble.
So now it's 20-10, yep. And you're thinking, God, this is why we can't have nice things. We can't even blow out New England.
Well, and then four plays later, it was 27-10.
Yeah.
So it was okay.
I suppose, yep.
Yeah, remember? Like he comes out.
Yeah, Debo, 55-yarder.
First play. Next play is Debo for 55 yards. Yeah. Okay, before we do Grandy's grades, we had mentioned Nick Sorensen. Nick Sorensen on tackling. I need to hear this because a birdie in my ear says, I'm sorry. What did he say about tackling? Nick Sorensen today was asked about the tackling. Here's what he said.
We miss tackle sometimes because we're aggressive. Like, we do coach our guys to take their shots. If you show, like, make me a cut up of those tackles, and I'll tell you if it's a good or bad one, to be honest. I mean, that's just, we play aggressive, we play violent. We have, you know, sometimes Fred shows up with quite a few missed tackles, but if a guy stops his feet and they're having to take time and that guy loses a yard, but you kind of fall off and now we've got two other guys coming, then that's not a bad missed tackle. Sometimes they're a little bit different. I'd have to quantify it by looking at tape. Then I could probably talk you through if they're good or bad or not.
Okay.
The question was, the last 2 weeks, the defense has missed 29 tackles. What does the film show? Is it fatigue? Are these guys breaking down a little bit? And his first part of the answer was, I wouldn't say it's fatigue. And then we pick up the answer after that. So he doesn't think it's fatigue. And he's right. Not every missed tackle is the same.
Yes, but that's a conceptual answer. I'd like a specific one because the rest of what he said, I totally disagree with.
He says, I wouldn't say it's fatigue. And that's his opinion.
Okay.
And, You know, then he starts with, I think we miss tackles sometimes because we're aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
We do coach our guys to take their shots, which they do, and Hufanga did that on the 50-yard Murray touchdown. He shoot, you know, shoot your shot, it's all you got.
It is.
He did. He missed. He wasn't anywhere near the ball carrier. They scored.
Okay, but what I'm sort of hearing there is we get an answer that's like, so first of all, it's not fatigue, and then we get the conceptual answer of sometimes missed tackles aren't bad missed tackles. And then we get to, I mean, I'd have to look at the tape to see if ours were.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't like this answer at all for multiple reasons. First of all, don't try to tell us you haven't watched the tape, because you have. You play in 48 hours. I don't want to hear for 2 seconds that a coach on Tuesday afternoon, 48 hours after you lost a game, 48 hours before you play again, you're going to try to tell us that you didn't watch the tape. That is disingenuous. That is factually incorrect. I am wildly confident. And if you haven't watched the tape, I do want Robert Saleh on the next plane.
Well, I've watched the tape.
That's stupid.
For God's sakes, right?
That's ridiculous.
He says, I'd have to quantify it by looking at tape. Then I could probably talk you through if they're good or bad or not.
Okay, well, they're definitely bad. There's a bunch of bad ones, because what you just described to us as a not-so-bad missed tackle is that when you're being overly aggressive as taught, and even though you don't wrap up and bring someone to the ground, you knock them off their line, you slow them down so that two other defenders can get there, and you lose a yard or whatever.
Yeah. Nick, conceptually, he's right.
Right, but Nick, you didn't lose a yard. James kept getting 8, even though he was being hit behind the line. That's a bad missed tackle. You didn't slow him down. You let him go right through the line and break 2 more and get a first down. Repeatedly. I don't like the answer.
No, conceptually,
that's not a good answer.
The concept of what he's saying, I buy, but
yes,
the actuality of it. And the question was, the last 2 weeks, the defense has missed 29 tackles. That's the lead up to the question. And the question was, what does the film show? Is it fatigue? Are they breaking down little bit? And so that's why he was a little bit more defensive.
Yes, but it's a classic use of public relations training, which is when someone asks a specific question and you don't want to talk about that specific thing, you get broad. You get broad, right?
Yeah.
Hey,
oh, yeah.
Tiger, what happened on the approach shot on 11?
Hey, well, it's Tiger.
You know, my 5-iron was, you know, can be a club that I kind of struggle with at times. And, you know, it's been something that I've been playing with. But, you know, quite frankly, it's been something that's improving greatly. And so I feel very good about my 5-iron. I didn't ask you about the last 5 years of your 5-iron. I asked you about the shot
right
on 11 today.
My swing feels good. My game looks good. I like my chances. That was the old Tiger,
yes,
the three, tell me the 3-sentence response. And, you know, if you look at the tape,
I don't like the answer.
Well, and I'll go back and watch the tape one more time tonight. And by the tape,
you don't need to watch the game 8 times, Dibs. You're a radio host. I appreciate your effort.
I'm going to watch the last 2 drives again.
Okay.
And I'm just going to look at the last 2 drives and highlight what happened with James Conner, because I'm looking at the game log here. Arizona's got the ball 1st and 10 at their own 9 after the Mason fumble, and it's Conner for 9, and then Conner for 6, tackled by Diamador Lenore. He's in the secondary.
Correct.
After 6 yards. And then you got Conner for 3, Conner for 8, Calamari throws to McBride, incomplete pass, 3rd and 5, they pick it up. 4th and 5, they pick it up, and on it goes. And the drive before that, there's a whole bunch more Conner. There's Conner for 3, for 8, for 10, etc. And these are plays where tackles were missed.
Yes.
A couple of them where Conner broke 2 and 3 tackles.
Yeah, and they don't feel like good missed tackles.
Right.
I think you lost the game because of them.
Exactly. So.
So, anyway, yeah, I don't love the answer.
Well, he's clearly in defensive mode because there were additional questions and answers that Nick responded with negative retorts.
Okay, and I get it. I get it. The Niners right now, look, it's not fun to do press conferences after you lose. I get it. But at the same time, like, there's a way to handle that answer without selling your team down the river. That's what he doesn't want to do, right? Like, there's got to be something between that answer and then him coming out and going, you know what? Hufanga, who now is going to go on IR, is a tackle misser. That's what he is. He's a tackle misser. Like, you don't need to do that. But why can't you address this and say, look, yeah, this is something that was not up to par over the weekend, and we're working on it in a short week. And yes, needs to be better. As opposed to giving me conceptual, like, well,
yep.
You know what I mean? Some missed tackles, like, was it in October? Was it a September missed tackle? December? What's happening here? Is the player a linebacker? Is he a defensive back? Does his last name start with the first half of the alphabet? Second half, they're not all the same. Well, okay, Nick, that's not what we're talking about, and you know that.
Yes, but he is clearly feeling the pressure, and he's feeling embattled because the next question was about what Nick Bosa said and saying
adjustments. Nick,
exactly. Yep. And Sorensen's response is, I don't think it was something we didn't adjust. We started changing some of the calls. We did mix it up, whether it was too high or brought pressure. I thought we talked about it on the sideline. What happened on that one play with the 50-yard touchdown run?
Yep.
And I don't think it was really any breakdown or miscommunication on not adjusting late, because we were changing things up and getting different looks with our shell and bringing different types of pressure as well. He's very defensive.
Well, look, he's a defensive coordinator. He's a brand new coordinator, and he's dealing with high expectations and low output.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this.
Well, he might be honestly able to say that Nick Sorensen so far is not built for this. But that's the deal.
I can honestly say you kind of miss me.
I can honestly say that I'm sort of a scapegoat.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Want to do Grandy's grades?
Yeah, I would love to. Let's do Grandy's grades.
He's sober.
Ish. How did the 49ers grade out this week? Did they pass? Did they fail? Let's find out. It's time for Grandy's Grades on Willard and Dibs.
All right, I'm back. Time for Grandy's Grades. Niners lose week 5, 24-23 to the Cardinals. We begin, as we always do, with the quarterback position. Brock Purdy, 19 for 35, 244, one touchdown, two interceptions. He checks in with me with a C-.
Good uptick right there.
Yeah, it is good. What do you think?
I had him in a straight C, but I'm not mad at the C-. The second pick, well, you're getting into desperation mode. He got hit on the throw.
Yeah, but
the first pick was a bad, bad pick.
See, that's funny. I'm much more knocked off by the second pick than the first pick.
Yeah.
Just because I get where you're coming from on, I know you've said it was kind of a lazy pass.
Yeah.
But I look at picks differently when they're tipped balls. I think quarterbacks are throwing through tiny little windows all the time. And if somebody gets a finger on it, somebody got a finger on it. I mean, that ball, if not tipped, was going to be a completion to George Kittle. The second one is a blitz that's coming on your sight side. You can see it. You've got a hot route, and you didn't use it. You held on to it too long.
Yep.
It's a lesson you've learned before, checks notes, in Philadelphia 2 years ago. And so, to me, that one is a little bit more on Brock than the second one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the first one.
Sure. And, you know, the fact that we're arguing over which pick was worst speaks to where the grade should be. And you had Kittle and a virtual walk-in touchdown, and you threw that one too high. And I thought you did a little too much run around, so I'm not mad at the C-.
I'm with you. It's probably more like a CC+. Definitely not one of his best games by any stretch. I also didn't think it was a disastrous performance. I did not think Brock Purdy on my short list of who lost the game for them. But yeah, not one to write home about.
Yeah, weird. They didn't score a single point, but they moved the ball for the most part still in the second half. Yeah, part of that is just because they didn't have a kicker.
Fumbled and got a tip ball. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Up next, skill positions, which is running backs and fullbacks, tight ends, and wide receivers. For that group, I gave them a grade of a B- for their performance Sunday.
What's the thought process? Give us a little more.
Well, Brandon Ayuk showed up.
Yeah,
he was very, very good in this one. George Kittle was good. I had another touchdown, did have one drop, but for the most part, he was good. Jordan Mason, aside from the fumble down the stretch, that was a major, major detractor, but had a good game other than that. Debo Samuel did not show up. What, 20 yards from scrimmage?
There was nothing.
Yep.
There
it was bad.
I thought he looked sluggish. Yeah, like
he brings that grade down a lot for me.
You said B minus?
Correct.
I might go more towards C plus, just because, yes, Brandon Ayuk, this is probably down more like C minus, D plus, if not for Brandon.
Yep.
Brandon Ayuk was fantastic, and I don't want to like ruin Jordan Mason's day because it wasn't a horrible day, but it's a horrible mistake. Like, it's a game-changing mistake.
Yep.
And you gotta wear that. And add in how sluggish Debo looked. Yeah, I'm more comfortable with something in the C plus range.
I was thinking B minus the whole time, so I think we're in lockstep. And if it wasn't for the Jordan Mason fumble, it's probably a B plus or higher. Even without Debo Samuel, you didn't really need him. If Mason doesn't fumble and you're able to somehow get three out of that, now Murray needs a touchdown to beat you. That fumble, though, for me, brings it down a whole grade at least.
Yeah, that was rough. It's weird because the offense did not score in the second half, but you don't have terrible grades throughout much of the offense. Well, I felt weird putting this together.
I got it, but I get you. Like, I think it's a little, you know, you don't want it to sound like an excuse, but it's kind of circumstantial. I think it's two different things when you have an offense that flat just can't move the ball versus an offense that goes up and down the field and then makes one sort of like just backbreaking mistake at the end of a drive.
Yeah, I'm with you. Up next is the offensive line. I felt strange putting this grade out as well. I mean, the team still averaged, what, over 6 yards per rush on the 5.9, so almost exactly 6 yards per rush. Offensive line, I gave them a B overall for Sunday's game.
I lean B minus because you look at a lot of the things that Brock Purdy had to do were, again, outside the pocket, and you had Jordan Mason doing a lot of it with second effort, and I didn't think, especially in the second half when, you know, you needed to protect Brock Purdy in the biggest of moments, you didn't. And I know that they blitzed, but that was a breakdown. And your first possession of the second half was a pick where Brock Purdy again was pressured. I still think the offensive line has a lot to prove to me, so I am a B minus.
Yeah, I like the B grade. I do. I have a question, and it won't be answered until we see more football.
Is this office hours for the teacher?
Well, I guess you could call it that. 5 to 6 is a good hour.
Okay.
I want to know if all of Brock's scrambling is actually offensive line forced, or if Brock is deciding to do that a little bit too much on his own.
Good question for Greg Cosell tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm seeing him being a little too eager to break out of the pocket. There's times, I think, when he can hang in there.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then that's not on the line.
Right.
Like, I think in our minds, we're like, oh, he's scrambling again. There's no room. It's like, I think sometimes, yes, maybe even most of the time, but there are times right now where Brock, who's had some success running the ball, starts, you know, doing the pirouette, and I don't know if he needs to that quickly.
And on top of that, one of the sacks that the O-line gave up was where Brock tried to scramble around for 20 seconds, and ultimately he got sacked and lost 14 yards or whatever it was. And they got into the 4th and 24, and they had to go for it because they were in field goal range, but they don't have a kicker. So that sack is less on the offensive line and more on Brock for not throwing the ball away. Okay, onto the defense, front seven, which is the down linemen and the linebackers. They get my worst grade so far, D+. First half on the ground defensively was awesome. Then James Conner got going, and as you guys are just talking about, the countless missed tackles, you weren't able to pressure Kyler Murray that often either. A D+ for me. The ground defense the second half, so bad.
I thought that you're spot on, number one, but number two, I think you're giving almost a little bit too much of a pass for the first half because of the fact that we have now learned from Kyle Shanahan that if you really want to look at whose responsibility Kyler was on that opening drive, which, how many plays was that?
Two
plays. Okay, on the second play of the drive, who was Kyler's responsibility if he's going to do the read option and hold the ball and go around the right end? Linebackers, Devondre Campbell. And they misplayed it, and the Cardinals got a touchdown out of it. And I know it feels like that one went away because the Niners just rallied back and outscored them 23-3 for the rest of the half. However, that ended up, obviously, every point mattered in the game, and so that one has to factor into it, too. I think it's a fair grade.
I'd give him a C, maybe C-, because solely of Nick Bosa and a spectacular interception, and that's a front seven play. That was a singular play by an unbelievable player who read it, and he made the play, and he took that away, and it ultimately led to the final points they would score in the football game. So that singular play bumps him up to a C for me.
Yeah, that was an awesome play. Up next is the secondary. That group gets a C+. For the most part, did a pretty good job in the passing game. Marvin Harrison didn't really do anything. He only hurt you on that 4th and 5, where they actually got pressure on Kyler Murray. They brought the blitz, and he just backed up and threw a jump ball. And it was Marv just beating Isaac Yiadom. For the most part, they were okay. They missed some tackles as well. Hufanga now on IR again. Maybe not the biggest loss, because I'm just getting sick and tired of watching him dive at people's legs and missing tackles over and over.
He's overly aggressive. He's overly aggressive, and he quite frankly always has been, and you're okay with that if he adds in some big plays that come from that aggressiveness, but that has not been the case in very limited duty so far this year. So there's that. You bring up Yiadom, who I thought was a better version of himself for most of the game until the Harrison play, which is a huge bummer, and I still don't understand what's going on with Charvarius Ward. And the more we learn, you know, I don't think he's playing at 100%, and so maybe he's trying to grind through some things. I might lower the grade a little bit. What'd you say? You gave him a B-?
C+.
C+. Okay, then actually I like it. Yeah, C+, that feels about
right. I got
him
in a B, solid B. I mean, if you look at some of the plays, and I'm thinking about the McBride breakup when he goes for the touchdown in the corner, and Mustafa got a hand in there late. The very next play, Jair Brown with a blitz. The only big, big glaring plays were the 4th and 5 conversion and, you know, having Hufanga fire too early on the Calamari touchdown run. I got him as a B.
All right, yeah. What are the last two groups?
Special teams and coaching.
Okay, let's hear
special teams, B+. You scored a touchdown, but you also didn't have a kicker, and that changed things up later on in the game. And then coaching gets an F for me. Ooh, in this game.
The rare Grandy F.
Please explain.
Second half, terrible. You got out-coached again on both sides of the football, for it's happened a number of times. I thought that this Niners team has been out-adjusted, and it was something Nick Bosa has been talking about. I don't see a change. I don't see this team. When they were at their best, what they would do is they would wear teams down, and they would be at their best in second halves, yep. And they haven't been that way in a while. And what you guys are talking about, the lack of fire and energy and Fred Warner pleading with the guys, ultimately that's got to come down on coaching as well.
Yeah, not a great day for the coaching. Still too vanilla on defense, and obviously on offense, if you get a scoreless second half, you got to look at the blown leads. To me, though, still, the only reason I wouldn't do an F is because that feels to me like you're saying that very few of the players are accountable for what happened out there. And if you look at the game-breaking plays, whether it be a fumble, whether it be an interception, all of that stuff, I don't put on any of the coaches. And so, not a good day for the coaches, but I'd lean more in the sort of like D+, C- range.
C- minus for
that's,
sure.
That's what I would do, because an F is putting too much of it on their plate.
Play calling was great. They blitzed more than they had. I didn't love the end of the first half time management again. And special teams for me, you get a C or a C-. You cannot have your kicker thinking that he's a strong safety. And the Trent Taylor fair catch on a 62-yard punt at his own 8-yard line or whatever, what are we doing, guys?
I'm with you. They made a big play that should have won the game, but then they made a big play that lost the game.
Thank you.
And not only does Jake have to know not to play it that way, he's got to be coached not to play that way. You don't go in there when there's people behind you. There's other people who are paid to do that.
Good stuff, Grandy.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Thanks.
All right, not done yet. 888-957-9570. We're sponsored by The Veranda in Concord. It's Willard and Dibbs.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
I remember watching that game, and I'm like, these Titans, they're in love with their press clippings. I remember feeling that. I was feeling that.
Wow.
No, kid.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
You know what? Both
of
you guys go to hell.
Now, back to
Will and Divvy
on 95.7 The Game.
If you want to hear Lo Neal get loose, Odyssey app, YouTube, and you should subscribe to all the shows while you're there, and then you don't miss anything, but you should hear what he had to say today, because A, it was fun.
Always.
As always. But he also... he had some things to say about the 49ers that are hard to hear. They were hard to hear.
They're getting pushed around, Mark, and the line of scrimmage is being reconvened, and on defense, that line of scrimmage is now 2 yards on your side of the line of scrimmage, and he's not wrong when you look at the way James Conner went about things in the second half and the last couple of drives. It was 6 and 8 and 4 and 10, and they were going backwards.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, I want to read you. This just popped up on my feed, and I want to read this to you. I think you especially are going to find this interesting, because you have a couple of times in the last couple of days put the spotlight on one Trent Williams on the Jordan Mason fumble. How would you describe what was going on for Trent Williams? And then I'll read to you what former 49er Ian Williams said.
First and goal, the 8. Trent goes to hit his block, and he misses it. He gets a half a man, and Mason goes about trying to break 3 and 4 tackles, and Trent's just chilling. He did what he could. He tried to block his guy, and he's just kind of watching it. And the ball comes out, and Trent, in my eyes, looks at it and thinks, it's going to take two steps and a dive. I should probably get over there and maybe get on that thing. All right, I'll do it. And by the time he saunters over and tries to get involved, it's too late. He was chilling.
All right. Ian Williams writes, 49ers, Cardinals. Analysis on costly Jordan Mason fumble in the fourth quarter shows one player, one man, out of 11, not knowing what they were supposed to do. Kittle gets absolutely annihilated by Buda Baker at the point of contact. Laughy emoji. It's the NFL. You're going to get gotten sometimes. Could Juice have held his block longer? Yes, because that guy caused the fumble. But that wasn't his man on that play. His man was the one who made the initial tackle on Mason due to Trent not blocking anyone on the play. Juice had to take the first threat because of Trent. Does Jordan Mason need to have better ball security? Yes. But the outcome of this play would have been much different if Trent Williams reaches the defender that Kittle chips for him. Ian Williams, former 49er, circles Trent Williams. Trent Williams.
Thank you. You brought it home.
As the reason for the Jordan Mason fumble above all others.
I'm going to look back at that play again through those eyes because Kittle does go in motion and he tries to get a chip and tries to help Trent out. And then Trent's got to get out there and get his hands on the defender, which he did a little bit. And then that alters what Juszczyk is going to do. Either way, that play was going nowhere. And you wound up with three different defenders on Jordan Mason, including the guy who comes in and peanut punches him in the face and then follows through and hits the ball. So that play was blown up from start to finish. But the only thing that could have avoided it is if Jordan Mason would have just held on to the football. But that ball got punched out, and there was a breakdown from a number of different guys.
Yeah, oh, of course, of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, plays are, right?
Like anything, I think everything in life is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sports fandom and sports media, especially now, increasing throughout the social media age, where we have to circle one person for everything. It's really tough. Like, I get it. Like, if you're in the leadership position, you're in the leadership position. You know what I mean? Like, next month we're going to vote on a lot of stuff, but what do we talk about? What do we think we're actually voting for?
One
person.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
One human.
One person. Anyway, right? So
yeah.
So I get it.
Who are you voting for a controller? Right?
Exactly. Who's running?
I don't even know.
Yeah, anyway. Prop, is there a measure B?
I don't know. So many props and measures.
Exactly. So many props. It's football season. Who doesn't have a lot of props?
Exactly.
So
I got the under on props I vote yes to.
Oh, I bet. Well, you're just...
That's going to be a no for me, dog.
That's just you. That's you and how and your current age. Nope. Nope.
Dude.
Nope.
It's a strong
double nope.
We just got our property tax bill, and it's like, measure what?
Yeah.
I vote yes on that in 2012. All these measures, it sounds great. Fresh water for kids in school. Of course.
People are coming up to Dibs every day. Hey, we're here to represent change. No! Slam.
Yeah, it's going to be a no. What's it going to cost me? Well, it's going to cost you, you know, $12 a month for the rest of your life. No!
But it'd be really good for the environment. Get off my lawn.
Basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway.
Anyhow.
I think that this is the case with all of these things. Where we want answers, is it the coaches, is it the players, is it, I mean, we all look at the coach and the quarterback, and sure, they're involved in everything. But that's what, to me, that's what's so mind-blowing about these two losses, and why I'm firmly comfortable with the idea that the 49ers should be 4-1, because you got two football games that took an unbelievable series of events affected by tens of people that at the end of these games all went one direction. And if any one of them doesn't go that direction, the 49ers win. Combine that with the fact that for I don't know how many of the 60 minutes they outplayed their opponent, but certainly most in the Ram game, hell, just about all. You know, I can look at the game and be like, well, one of those teams looks a lot better than the other team, certainly in the Ram game. And you found a way to have fewer points at the end of the whole thing.
If there was no scoreboard in these five games,
good way to look
they'd be
it.
4-1. If this was like figure skating or gymnastics or boxing is a better analogy, where you look at all four quarters and you treat it like a boxing match and you judge it. And, you know, let's go to the scorecards. The Niners would be 4-1. But unfortunately, there is a scoreboard, and you can't close. You've been knocked out in the last round twice in these bouts you should have won.
Big week next week. Week from tomorrow, dude. October 16th, we broadcast live from John Madden Studio. And remember the great John Madden. Members of the Madden family will be there. Steve Mariucci will be there. He joins us live at 3 o'clock. Long-lost recordings of John's KCBS performances will be played. There's food, there's drink. And the chance to buy Mornings with Madden, which is the new book written by our friend Stan Bunger. Private event. Tickets are available. Go to eventbrite.com and just search Madden. And then the football hour is coming up, right, Grandy? You got the football hour. You and Kyle Madsen can scream about the 49ers for a little while.
We might not scream, okay. But it won't be happy.
Yeah, you can scream. I want you to feel empowered, honestly. So that's what's coming up, the football hour with Grandy and Kyle Madsen. And it's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Do you want to do it again tomorrow?
I do.
Okay. I have two sign-offs today.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You ready?
Sure.
For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got. And go Padres.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.